like me, you probably have a closet full of local band merch. And whether you know it or not, a lot of that band merch was probably made by Divine Shirt Company right here in Winnipeg. Divine Shirt Company has made all of the Grey Witch Police merch, from our hoodies to our toques to our t-shirts. And if you're looking to get anything done, like screen printing, embroidery, graphic design, digital printing, go to see Divine Shirt Company at divineshirtcompany.ca and tell them which Police Radio sent you.
One of our colleagues, Sam Thompson, who, if you saw him, you'd sort of right away assume he was a hippie.
Welcome to Witch Police Radio. If you're a regular listener to the show, I guess you probably have an idea that I enjoy propaganda. And you know, I've talked to various members over the years, and I've had guest hosts talk to other members over the years. And one of those guest hosts is a previous guest on my show. This is getting very confusing, but I'm here with Greg Soden, who is the host of the Unscripted Moments podcast about propaganda, and now the author of a new book about propaganda that's based on the podcast. So there's a lot there to unpack. I think the best way to start this off is I usually have people introduce themselves, but I just did that. So I guess let's talk about the fact that you've been doing this show for a long time. You've been talking to band members, you've been talking to other musicians, you've been talking to academics, wrestlers, pretty much anybody who is a fan of this band from Winnipeg. And now this has turned into a much larger project, probably than you anticipated when you started out. So where are we now with Unscripted Moments?
So, yes, it has turned into something that I never could have anticipated. It started as like a singular obsession where I just couldn't stop, right? I was going so nuts on the project for so long, and it was all consuming as far as like my mental and creative energies went. Like, this was like the thing for me. And we are now over like 225 total episodes, I think. And we've done like 129 or 130 numbered episodes. So I try to save the numbered episodes for like a specific song.
Yeah.
So if an episode doesn't have a number, it's usually more of like a bonus episode where I'll like talk to Ryan Green about recording Today's Empires, Tomorrow's Ashes or something like that. So we have 129 numbered episodes about propaganda songs. And then we have about 100 more bonus episodes in addition to that. So it's been quite a crazy journey, and it feels good to have come this far with it.
And so you have this book that's coming out. And the interesting thing about the book is I was assuming when, I mean, it's not surprising to me that this turned into a book. You have so many hours and hours of content. I mean, I have many more episodes, but they're much shorter. You have these kind of epic lengths discussions about, the minutiae of propaganda and their songs and what the songs mean. And so I was expecting a book that would sort of, I don't know, be some kind of narrative discussing the history of the band. But this book is written in a format that is literally like the podcast. I mean, you're taking the interviews you've done with all of the various band members, and it's sort of a Q&A oral history kind of format almost. And that didn't surprise me too much, but the fact that this also focuses on individual songs. I mean, you'll have a section where it's Chris Hanna talking about such and such song, and then where you have former members like Beav talking about other songs. And was that always sort of the goal, to make it in the same format?
Yes. So there were so many options for doing this, but I always had the goal that this would be a collected interviews with members and past members of propaganda.
Yeah.
There are so many amazing oral history books and narrative books out there, like the Do What You Want book about Bad Religion, From Obscurity to Oblivion, The Story of No Means No by Jason Lamb.
Missing Like Teeth by Sheldon Burney.
Absolutely. So this book was never going to be a book like that. I really hope that maybe someday somebody will write a kind of an oral history and maybe use what this book is as a motivation or something like that. I would love it if there was another one someday, but that was never this project for me, because I wanted this project to be something that kind of encapsulated what I did on this podcast. And so it was always just going to be an interviews collection. And I was looking at the Punk Planet Collected Interviews book by Dan Sinker, which has introduction chapters, photographs, edited and condensed interview transcripts in a Q&A format. And I was like, I really want to do something exactly like this. And that's exactly what I did. So the interviews that are in the book are written as question and answers, but they are super duper edited and condensed and made into a readable format, which took like a year and a half. So it's not an oral history per se, but so many stories of the band get told. Like Jordan talks about the, you know, the demo years. Chris talks about cover songs. They talk about old Winnipeg stories. It's like a really wide ranging variety of topics.
Yeah,
but it's not like a narrative. It takes place in the order that the podcast came out. There are essays and photographs and stuff like that along the way. But that's the format that I always envisioned it, and I'm really pleased that I was able to make that vision happen, because that is the vision that I felt honored what I have always wanted to do here on the podcast.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah. Do you, are all of the interviews you've done with the band members, are they all represented here, or did some of them get sort of left by the wayside?
Every single interview that I've done with a past and present member of Propagandhi is in here, except for one. Okay. There is an interview that Beav, Ryan Nash, and I did about Agassi's most recent album, where we did a track-by-track breakdown of the full Agassi album. That is the only one that isn't in here. But every single interview with Chris, every interview with Todd, every interview with Celine, both interviews with Jord, and the interview with John Sampson, and every other interview with Beav are all in the book in a concise format. So there's only one that didn't go in, but it's because it's solely about Agassi.
Yeah, that makes sense for sure. Do you feel at this point, I mean, not that you've got, well, first of all, I mean, At Peace came out while this was all happening. I mean,
yeah.
I'm assuming most people listening to this are from Winnipeg and are aware that Propagandhi just put out a new record. It's kind of big news over here and probably where you are as well. But that happened sort of right as you were in the heat of all of this. I'm sure you knew the record was coming out because of your hardcore fandom there. But how does that change things with the show in general? I mean, you look like you were inching closer and closer to the finish line of having covered every single song. And then, boom, you got this new record with all this new stuff suddenly appears.
Yeah, what's really cool is that I talked to Todd on the podcast in 2023, and he talked a lot about the writing process that they were going through. So that goes in the book. Then in 2024, I talked to Jord when they were halfway done recording, and that goes in the book. Then in March of 2025, I talked to Chris about his recording process being done, and that goes in the book. So the book actually goes through the entire recording process, which is kind of cool.
It is.
It's represented in some way. But with regards to the podcast, like, we only have a couple songs left. We have COINTELPRO, In Flagrante Delicto from Victory Lap. We have Cognitive Suicide and Unscripted Moment from Failed States. And those are really the only ones we haven't done. We haven't done Last Band on Earth, which is the last song on the CD version of the I'd Rather Be Flag Burning split. We're working on that as well. But the podcast has slowed down so much because my life has gone in so many different directions. I know you know how that feels.
Absolutely.
And so we are in no hurry to make new episodes about the new songs. We want to finish the original 1989 to 2024 discography first. But people who are familiar with the podcast may have realized that we've been having some guest hosts do some random things. So if anybody out there has any cool ideas, like if you want to do like a 5 to 15 minute monologue about your life story in relation to a Propagandhi song, I'm loving doing bonus episodes with other people to get more voices on the show, because I've always seen it sort of like as a community of like Propagandhi fans. And so if anybody out there ever wanted to do something for the show and you wanted to be like, hey, I want to make a 15 minute episode about Rented PA or Vampires Are Real, by all means, please do it.
Yeah.
And email me at propagandhipod@gmail.com and we can talk about how you can host your own episode. But we're not rushing episodes about At Peace. When Victory Lap came out, we didn't start the podcast for 2.5 more years after Victory Lap was released. So Victory Lap had the time to percolate within me as a body of work in relation to Prop Gany's entire catalog. So we still have a few more songs to go. Steve and I are just kind of going at our own pace these days, and we've slowed down a lot. I started the podcast at a breakneck speed, and I went as hard as I possibly could for as long as I possibly could, because I knew this would happen. I knew that way down the road, there'd be way less energy for it.
For sure.
And way less free time. So I went as hard as I could while I had that space in my life available. But it feels really good to have so many behind us to know for a fact that we will accomplish episodes about every single song. And we're not going to rush at peace because the band themselves don't rush. And I think that it's the most appropriate way to follow their model of not rushing brand new stuff, because it has to sit.
Yeah.
You know, it has to percolate and relate to our lives, and it has to have new moments where we relate to the songs through lived experiences, where things happen to us while we're listening to the songs in our lives, and then we have new stories to tell about our reactions and relationships with those songs. But time has to pass for that to happen.
For sure. I think you're right about that. I think even with Victory Lap, you know, the one, the previous record, I got it at the release show. I got the copy of the record at the release show. I've listened to it a number of times, obviously, since then. But I still don't know if some of the songs have sunk in to the degree that songs from failed states or from supporting cast or, you know, obviously the earlier ones have really affected me. I mean, they're great songs. I can sing along to them. I can think about what they mean, but, and I can hear on your show people talking about their own perceptions of it and interpretations of it. But
yeah,
I think it's still, it's one of those bands where you can listen to something from 20 years ago and it can have, depending on where you are in life and how your views have changed and things like that, it can have a deeper meaning and it can sink in maybe a different way. So I think, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to wait, because even with me at peace, when I got the record, I listened to it a bunch of times, but I was doing other things. I had it on in the background and I had to actually sit down and listen to it with nothing else happening to fully kind of, you know, let them sink in. And then even then, it's going to take a while for sure to fully kind of decide which ones I like, why I like them. And I mean, obviously, you know, this as someone who listens to this band obsessively, like, you know, it takes effort. It rewards the listening to Propaganda is rewarding in that, like, you learn something about yourself and about the world and about every time you put the record on.
Yeah, I mean, I got the record in March, too.
Yeah, like you had an advance, right? Yeah, yeah.
Epitaph gave me an advanced copy of the record so that I could do a really cool episode with Jason Livermore, John Paul Peters, and Chris Hanna about the recording, mixing, mastering process of the whole record. And I was like, I have to hear the record before I record with Jason and JP, or it's just not going to make as much sense.
For sure.
So I had to have that initial shock of the first several listens before I talked to Jason and JP. So there's an interview with Chris on that episode as well, and he's the only one that I talked to before I heard the full record.
Okay.
But at peace, the song was out. But when I talked to JP, I'm like, JP, I am so surprised by this album. And JP's like, me too. So I've been sitting with the record for 2 months longer than other people that got it on May 2nd. And it was still a huge surprise to me. It took me 10, 15 listens to really kind of be like, whoa, start to pick out the little nuances and what I appreciated about it, you know? So it took a while. It takes a while. It is a grower of an album for sure, which is really nice because it requires a little bit of work to sit with it, which is something that modern music obviously discourages people from doing with the breakneck speed that we all consume art and media these days. Sitting with something is very much becoming a lost art. And I love that Propaganda still forces me to do that and not just take the easy way out, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I know we're not here to talk about at peace, but one of the things I thought found interesting about the record is, I mean, it is different. It's slower. It's almost more, it's like more pensive. It seems like it's more personal. And a lot of people online have been kind of shitting on it, which is weird to me because I loved it immediately because it was different, right? But it's such a weird band because they've been around for so long. They've had a number of, you know, lineup changes and stylistic changes. And it seems like people are really sort of set in their ways about which era of Propaganda they like or which specific sound they expect from this band. And like you can watch people yelling at each other on social media about whether it's a great album or a terrible album. And I don't think I saw the same when Victory Lap came out or when Failed States came out. I think it was a little bit more people were on the same page, but this one has been divisive. And I think that's cool because it is different. There's synthesizer on it. Like, I mean, it's slow. It's cool.
Yeah, I love the divisiveness. I think that's awesome because it reminds me of Potemkin City Limits Part 2, where
sure.
like in 2005 when that record came out, people were like, this album sucks.
Yeah.
And so I remember that very clearly.
So do I, for sure.
And I think that I can't remember what episode it was on the podcast that we talked about. I think it was the Cut Into the Earth episode or maybe the Life at Disconnect episode. But this record at peace to me is if they took Fixed Frequencies, Cut Into the Earth, and Life at Disconnect and made it into an album.
Sure, so that makes sense, yeah.
They have always been the band that they are now. I mean, obviously they've grown and changed, but 20 years ago they were previewing these sounds, you know? So none of this is new. And so for me, I think I said on those episodes, I was like, man, this slower pace and this like more artistic approach to these songs that are less about just being Heshers
yeah.
and more about, you know, taking your time, I could see that being the future of the band. When
for
these
sure.
guys are 60 years old, I could see them being like Cut Into the Earth is who we are now, which I, you know, it's crazy to me that that actually kind of has happened on this record because I was talking about it 5 years ago on the podcast, which is hilarious to think about.
Yeah, it is for sure. And I think you're right. Potemkin is a really good comparison. I mean, even when that came out, I was even kind of like, I don't know, because yeah. the one before it had been so much of just like a holy shit, what happened to my brain, you know? And then that came out and it was like, it starts off on like the best possible like opening song. And then it kind of got weird and it took me a while to definitely get into it, and now I love it, obviously, but
yeah,
I mean, it was a grower, and I think this one is too. But to get back to your project and the book
yeah.
and everything else that's happening, how do you I'm sure I asked you about this last time you were on the show, and I'm sure I've asked you this many times over the years as well, but I mean, you're not from Winnipeg, you're not even a Canadian. This is a it's weird. I mean, because this is,
yeah.
to a lot of us here, this is a very, very hyper-local band. I know they've
yeah.
gone on to bigger and better things. They're very well-known internationally. They play big festivals. They're on tour in Europe probably right now. But, I mean, it seems so. They seem so Winnipeg, especially with all the local references and things like that. And you have sort of become this, like, honorary Winnipegger on purpose to sort of get into this. I mean, is that less weird now that you're sort of an outsider looking into this weird little punk rock world that this band came from? I mean, because they've kind of expanded so much in terms of popularity and its style and everything else?
Yeah, it's really weird. I've just been obsessed with this band since I heard them in the late 90s. And I think that for me, a really big turning point in my fandom of the band was when I actually lived in Saskatchewan.
Sure.
And so I always had known that Todd was from Regina in Saskatchewan. I went to Regina a bunch of times when I was living in Saskatoon. And so things just kind of clicked for me in a new way when I was living in Saskatchewan. And I interviewed Chris in 2009 for The Sheaf,
okay.
which is the University of Saskatchewan's student newspaper. And I was a graduate student at U of S. And the newspaper people knew that I liked Propaganda, and Propaganda was coming to play Louis in the basement of the student union at U of S.
Cool.
And they were playing with the Rebel Spell, another great Canadian band.
For sure.
And it just kind of clicked for me when I was living in Saskatchewan. I got it in so many new ways, and it clicked for me in so many new ways. And from 2009 onwards, I was like a complete obsessive about all things Propaganda. So it really, I had loved them for more than a decade at that point, but it really was living
yeah.
in that landscape of Saskatchewan, which is pretty similar to Manitoba in a lot of ways, that that it really took me to the next level. So it really was, and I never would have done this podcast if I had never lived in Saskatchewan. It's a hugely transformative life experience for me that led me to being, you know, into everything in the, at just a deeper level. Be careful how much you reveal.
We'll be right back. And it makes me wonder also how much other stuff that I listen to that I love that is not from here that I'm maybe missing a piece of, you know? I mean, there's bands from, you know, say New York or whatever that I'm a big fan of, and I've never been there. And I wonder if would going there or living there, I guess probably more so, would that change things? Probably would. And yeah, and then
absolutely.
I mean, I listen to like a ridiculous amount of Jamaican music. Never been to Jamaica. If I went there, would I get it more? I don't know. Maybe, probably would.
I think you would. I think you would. And it was really funny too, because when we were doing the podcast, like the Winnipeg Free Press did an article about us, but we had never been to Winnipeg at that point. But then in October of 2021, when the band did those shows in Winnipeg, I went to Winnipeg and met you, hung out in your yard.
Yeah, that's right,
saw the spot where Vic Ruggiero from the Slackers played a backyard show for you. And it really was amazing. Going to like the murals on West Broadway spot, going to the place in front of the Capitol where the statue on the back of Let's Talk More Rock was, and things
like that.
It was
already gone when you came here, though, right? It was already been, yeah.
Yes, it was. But that's fine. That's fine. I didn't need it to be there. I just needed to be in the spot where the angle of the photograph was taken. And I like laid down on the ground and I kind of emulated the angle of the back cover of Let's Talk More Rock. And I stood up, I went inside the building where G7 was and stood on those steps and went through a drive through, you know, River Heights. So many little things that just kind of made the entire thing click for me in a deeper way. So I just love that about it, that it just, you know, I'm a propaganda tourist, you know, and I love that everybody in Winnipeg is so cool and was so excited to see me at those shows. And I talked to so many people.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to doing that again. Hopefully in the very near future.
Yeah, that'd be great. It'd be good to see you again. But I think that the idea of a propaganda tourist, I don't think that would work for every band, right? I mean, I think this is a band that has so much, it's those hyper-specific references, which is my favorite thing about them, I think, is that they can talk about those former murals on the former Nygaard building, which has its whole another backstory because of the Nygaard criminal stuff. But I mean, that is probably... It means something to everyone who hears it, but not necessarily in the same way as it means to people. Like, I used to bike past it every single day on the way to work. And so that, when I first heard that, that was happening. And it was just like, wow, this is an extremely specific Winnipeg experience that, I mean, even though it's just talking about a banner or mural, you know? But yeah, it's pretty cool that you've got a chance to now sort of see where all that is. And I think that you can listen to tons of other punk bands even, and they don't mention their city in any way, shape or form. It's just, here's a song about whatever, right? I mean, it's a rare band that goes that specifically local. And I think that someone should start selling tickets to propaganda tours. I think there should be like there's a lot of spots. And even, you know, Weaker Thens, add that to the mix and John K. Samson solo stuff. And you have, you know, weeks worth of Winnipeg traveled to cover.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's such a cool town, too. And I live in Buffalo, which is a very similar town in a lot of ways. Like when I was in Winnipeg, I was like, man, so much of this feels very Buffalo-esque. And I'm from St. Louis originally, which is another mid-sized city. So I'm a mid-sized city appreciator in general, you know? So when I go to a place like Winnipeg or Saskatoon or St. Louis or Buffalo, those places are very home feeling to me. So it was just like kind of a crazy thing, and I'm just really glad, and I'm looking forward to going back, like I said.
With the book, this is coming out, it's not out yet, but I mean, it'll be out imminently, and this is, well, not imminently, but soon enough, and this is a podcast, so someone could hear it the day it gets released, or they could hear it, you know, months from now when the book is suddenly available. They can pre-order it now. I know that part is already happening, but imagine propaganda goes on for another 20 years. I mean, it'd be nice if they did. Who knows, right? I mean, it's there's no way of predicting it really, but what happens to the book then? Because this seems like almost like an endpoint, going through all these years of interviews and editing these interviews and getting it published and all that. I mean, it seems like a very significant sort of stop for the show and for the whole project. But obviously, there's more music and there could be much more to come. What, like, do you then re-release the book with a whole extended section, or does something new happen? Like, have you, I know that's a ways off, but have you thought about this sort of second phase of the whole project?
Yeah, it's kind of weird because the interviews that are in the book, it's like 20 hours of interviews or something like that, that I had to condense down into like a super readable format.
Yeah.
It was like 500 something pages of like transcripts that I was sorting through. And so I don't really know if I'm going to personally do any more. I don't know if members of the band will come back on the podcast. I'm trying to bother them a lot less these days. And so I'm not exactly sure if there will be more. Life has its eras, and I see this almost as like a really specific era. It's sure. like pandemic lockdown through their new record. You know what I mean? And there's so much of the pandemic commentary in the book. Like one of the interviews that I did with Sue Lim, we were talking about a protest march in the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd.
Yeah.
And if you think back on that in like mid-2020, whenever there was the lockdown stuff, we were leading up to an election in the fall of 2020, and then the protests in the aftermath of the killing of George Floyd. I mean, that is like a really hyper-specific era of all of our lives
sure.
that is captured in this specific book. And it's just so strange. And so I see it as like a really specific era, right? Lockdown through new record.
Yeah.
And so I don't really know if there will be another one. I just see this being a pretty culminated capstone piece to the podcast. And, you know, it's super niche. This is really only for like the most hardcore of hardcore fans. And it's on a super niche publishing company out of the UK that believed in the project in the exact format that I wanted. So other publishers wanted me to change the format entirely and be like yeah. an oral history where I was talking to tons and tons of other people. And I was just like not into that at all because I saw this vision so clearly in my mind that I went with the publisher that was like, that is the vision that you are absolutely able to pursue. So it's a very specific project that will appeal to a very niche group of people. And I'm okay with that because that's the project that I envisioned. And like I said, I hope there will be a more comprehensive biography in the future by somebody, but I am just not that kind of writer.
Yeah.
And it just wouldn't have worked for me. It never would have come out had I pursued an oral history like the Jason Lamb No Means No biography. It never would have been released because that is just not how my brain and organization in my life operates. And yeah. I needed it to be so hyper specific to my vision of the project, which will be a turnoff to some people who want something different than what it is. And that's totally okay because it just is what it is, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And I like how you didn't compromise on that too. Like you had this planned out for a while, obviously, and you went with the way you wanted to go.
Yeah, it's really tough because I really waffled on it as well. Like somebody told me in the publishing world what they thought that I should do. Like there was one publisher that really wanted me to focus on an oral history of the band in the Fat Records years.
Oh, okay.
Like How to Clean Everything, Less Talk, More Rock, Today's Empires, Tomorrow's Ashes. They
If you're American, Today's Empires does not count as Fat Records release. So.
True. Yeah. And they really wanted me to focus on that era, like 93 to 2001, yeah. 2002. And to me, that just did not interest me. Because, like, you know when you read, like, a biography of a band? Like, I just read Mark Hoppus from Blink-182's memoir, and so much of it is up through Enema of the State, and that's, like, 80% of the book, almost. It's, like his life up through Enema of the State. And I'm like, what about all those other years? And there's so much that's glossed over. And so when I think about How to Clean Everything, Last Talk, More Rock, and Today's Empires, Tomorrow's Ashes, that's not my favorite era of the band.
For sure. No, me neither.
And so I was not interested in doing that book that specific publisher was pitching to me because I didn't care. It yep. didn't speak to me. That project didn't speak to me. So that is why I did what I did, because like I needed to do a project that spoke to me 100% out of the gate. And that's why I did an interviews collection. And there's also like an album too, which is absolutely insane. But that's why I
ask about next, but yeah, keep going. Yeah.
That's why I did the format that I did, which like I said, won't appeal to some people, but that's totally okay. I just wanted to do this really hyper specific project, and that's what I did. Here in the
Part of the fun of doing the podcast is that you've had all these people covering songs over the years. I mean, there's tons of them, really interesting ones and like some really weird ones and stuff. So you have this record coming out now, like as a companion to the book. Was that always the plan?
Yes. Well, I always wanted to do a covers compilation because there are dozens and dozens and dozens, so many more than are in the album.
Yeah.
And so the publisher is called Earth Island Publishing, Earth Island Books. They're in the UK, and they also have a record label that they have associated. It's called Engineer Records, which a few past guests of the podcast are in bands that are on Engineer Records.
Cool.
In the UK. And so I told the publisher, I was like, hey, we have all these covers too. Would you be interested in doing like a cassette tape or something like that? And we started talking about it, and I went through my email and I found every single WAV file that's ever been submitted to the podcast. Not MP3, just WAV files. And there were 30 of them. And then a few more came in as well. So then it got up to 32. And I was like, I have 32 WAV files. And so I didn't chase down any of the people that submitted covers to the podcast in MP3 format.
Yeah.
So it's really funny that like to get on the album, you had to have originally sent me a WAV file, which is like hilarious. So I sent them the WAV files all down to Paul Hodger, who lives in Winnipeg.
Outside of Winnipeg. He's not technically, he will fight you on that. He's technically outside of Winnipeg, but yeah.
He's in the rural areas around Winnipeg.
Yes.
But I sent him all the covers and he mastered them all. So all the mastering for every single cover was done by a person in Manitoba, which is great.
Yep.
Paul has actually hosted a couple of episodes of the podcast.
And he has a foreword in your book too, right?
He does. Paul has a foreword in the book, so he's in the chapter. He wrote a chapter in the beginning, and he helped me with a little bit of editing later on in the process. And so Paul is very helpful. And he mastered the album twice because he mastered it. And then I changed the sequence and I took some songs out and I put some other songs in. And then we had Jamie Fougere, who lives in Winnipeg, yep. who is a friend of the podcast and hung out in Winnipeg during those shows. Jamie did the outside cover of the podcast artwork. He did the artwork on the CD discs, and he also did the layout for the entire CD jacket. So the layout of the album and the artwork was done by a Winnipeg guy,
cool.
Jamie, who's done so many great podcast cover artworks for the podcast Definitely. Over the years. And it's a 32-track double album. The first album is all electric, full band performances. And the second album is all acoustic, stripped-down performances.
Cool.
And I'm pretty stoked about that because you can pre-order the book from Earth Island as a bundle. And right now, all the shipping prices are in British pounds, which it is, if you live in Britain, I think the shipping is free. If you live in Europe, I think the shipping is like 5-6 pounds. Very, very normal shipping prices if you're in Europe. If you're in the US, Canada, or Australia, it's Brutal. Like 20, it's like 25 British pounds. But we are working on North American distribution options. We're also toying with the idea of printing loads of books at a North American publishing facility and me handling a lot of the shipping for North American shipping.
Cool.
And my co-host on the podcast, Steve, lives in Ontario. So we're thinking about me handling North American shipping, Steve handling Canadian shipping, and knocking those prices down. Because right now it's affordable, like in general, if you don't mind a little bit, but some people just can't swing it. So, but you can currently get it as a bundle if you pre-ordered it from the publisher as the book and the CD, or you can get just the CD from the record label, or you can get just the book from the publisher, and it will also be on streaming services, which is pretty sweet because That's the cool. band will get the covers will be licensed by the label. So the band, in theory, will be paid for these songs, which is pretty sweet.
That's kind of nice. Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. So obviously, I mean, most people listening to this are probably from Winnipeg or at least Canadian or from the US. Odds are they're going to want to wait for the shipping thing. But if they want to pre-order now, what's the best way to do it? How do they? I'll link to it in the show notes as well. But how do you find the stuff, the album, the book, everything else?
Yeah, if you Google Earth Island Books or Earth Island Publishing, it is earthislandbooks.com.
Okay.
And there, if you go to shop on their website, and there is two options. There's a special bundle price, and then there is another one that's just the book. And if you go to Engineer Records, I think it's engineerrecords.com. Let me just check the link here, engineerrecords.com. And you go to shop, the compilation is the first thing that pops up on engineerrecords.com.
Cool.
So that's only if you want the CD. It's only coming out on CD. We're not doing vinyl. We're not doing anything like that. This is a low budget, pretty stripped back project that we're not going nuts on. It's just purely for fun.
Yeah.
And it's called, the album is called How to Take a Couple of Victory Laps, Celebrating 40 Years of Propaganda. Because 1986 is the founding of Propaganda, 2026 is the 40th anniversary of the band. So we rounded up just a little teeny tiny bit because the book is coming out faster than we anticipated. We were thinking it was going to come out in January or February, but it's actually coming out officially in September.
Cool.
But we're gonna have copies way sooner than that. And I think that as soon as the books come in, the publisher is gonna fill all the pre-orders.
Oh, nice.
So people might have this thing in like July or August, way before the official release. It just depends but all the printing is occurring right now.
That's really cool. Yeah. And obviously at some point, there's a conversation for another time, but we'll have to get you to come to Winnipeg again. I know you want to anyway to sort of hawk the book in person.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah. And I'm like, not, it is really bizarre. Like, I'm going to do donations as well. Like, if there are any proceeds from this book, I cannot imagine that this will be an extreme amount of money.
Probably not.
But if there are proceeds of the book, I'm planning on doing a variety of charitable donations to a variety of causes. I haven't named any charitable donations like on the cover of the book, because what I envision seeing happening is that there are emergencies that happen all over the world.
Happening right now. Manitoba's on fire right now, yeah.
Absolutely. Like, I want any donations that I do to be timely. So if I get any money from this book project from the publisher, I am planning on researching stuff that's happening then. So cool. If I get money in 2027, I don't want to be tied to some donation that I chose in 2024. I want to tie something to what's going on now. So there will be charitable donations if there are any profits and proceedings or proceeds that come through from this book. So I will personally be following the spirit of the band and donating to a variety of causes, but I want my donations to be timely.
Yeah.
And I will also be soliciting ideas for specific donations from listeners, like on Instagram and stuff like that. Like, hey, what's an issue you care about right now? I got $300 that I want to like toss to a good cause. So that's how I'm planning on doing the charitable aspect of it, is waiting until down the road and seeing what happens then.
Very cool. Very cool.
J'attends l'unanimité. J'accorde au masque le bénéfice du doute. J'insiste au processus démocratique. Délivrera un jour le monde. La raison que j'ai peur de la mort est que ce sera peut-être pas fini. Si nous sommes des êtres éternels qui devront revivre sans fin. Oh Seigneur, que rien de ça soit vrai. Par contre, je soupçonne que si je retournais dans mon trou, hors de danger, au chaud et bien éclairé, avec une tank à eau chaude pis l'air central, ben disons c'est pas moi, vous verrez se révolter. Pis si on me le demande, j'avouerai que j'ai hâte d'accéder au programme d'enrichissement développé pour prolonger nos durées de vie en captivité. J'ai hâte de voir ces gardiens planifiés. Peut-être une cage plus grande, des chaînes plus longues, des nouvelles raisons de nous convaincre de rester. Pas, bah, on va-tu mourir? Oui, mon fils, Twitter, toi pis moi. Mais peut-être pas aujourd'hui. Les gars, je m'incline sous le fouet du gardien depuis si longtemps. La triste vérité est que cet enclos est la place à votre vieux père. Mais vous, vos cœurs sont purs. Quand les conditionneurs opérants viendront vous débourrer, je leur planterai mes vieilles dents. Tu prends la main de ton frère, courez comme le vent. Et si je suis pas là, attendez-moi pas. Allez-y, me calmez bien avec vos programmes d'enrichissement développé pour prolonger nos durées de vie en captivité. Mais tabarnak, vous allez voir, c'est quoi que moi j'ai planifié.